Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to Underground Wellness Radio, brought to you by undergroundwellness.com. Super pumped for today's show with Mira and Jason Calton, who are the authors of Naked Calories. This book, for real, y'all, is the bomb. Like, it was a huge lifesaver this weekend. As you guys know, I didn't do a show last Thursday because I flew to Vegas for a LifeVantage or a ProTandem conference, and I was all pumped up to go to Vegas, you know, have a good time, learn a lot of new stuff, and like Thursday night, I got hit with just a brutal sinus infection, and it does happen every once in a while, y'all. And even though I'm really, really healthy, I do get sick every once in a while, like everybody else. But fortunately, I brought the book with me, and 3 days I was like in my hotel room, miserable, feeling like my head was going to explode, but the book was so awesome. The book just like made my weekend. I was like, yo, I felt like it was just meant to be, because it's just a very enlightening book, and I'm really, really pumped up about speaking with the authors and enlightening you guys about what is going on in Naked Calories. You guys got to get it. It is in the Underground Wellness store. It's on Amazon. It's at CaltonNutrition.com. It's everywhere. Just get your hands on it. I'm 1,000% sure that you're absolutely going to love it. Thursday. We got two shows this week and two shows next week. Thursday is going to be Ask Paul Check. And so you guys know how that show is. Same time, same channel. Make sure you call in. I want to say email me your questions and post them on the Facebook wall and stuff like that. But to be honest, you guys know that the priority goes to the callers, and we might not get any written in or submitted questions in. So I'm going to highly recommend you guys dial in 347-237-5608 to speak with Paul on Thursday. Let's see what else we got. Of course, the Facebook address is facebook.com/undergroundwellness. And just in case you guys forgot, there's a little deal in the sidebar. It says fan only offer, and that's a little perk for my Facebook fans. You guys can get $10 off The Dark Side of Fat Loss, my ebook, by clicking on that link. And so the fan only offer in the left sidebar is like a little fan perk for you guys. The Underground Workout Manual, of course, is on sale in the Underground Wellness store. Couple more. Paleo Effects. I sent in my topic today. I'm covering the missing links, kind of going beyond the diet and exercise component of things. That's going to be my topic at my presentation at Paleo FX in Austin in March. And so you can go to paleofx.com, and the discount code is UWPFX for a $40 discount on that. The Paleo Summit is coming along. We're a little bit behind. We're like 2 or 3 days behind, but I think we're going to go into pre-launch next Monday, so you guys can get all registered for it and see all the different speakers and what they're all. It's dope. It's just straight up dopeness. Allison put together our first kind of PowerPoint slideshow video, and it's just really cool. I was watching it today, so you guys are gonna totally love this. It's really cool. It's a great idea. To see what else. I think that's it. I think we're ready to rock and roll with this awesome book by the Caltons. Again, their website is CaltonNutrition.com, CaltonNutrition.com. You can follow them on Twitter at Naked Calories. They're pretty active on there. They got some bios that are going to take me a couple minutes to get through, and they've got some big old words in it, and they got a lot of letters behind their name, so I'm going to skip that and give you the shortened version. The Caltons are the founders of Calton Nutrition and are among the world's leading experts on the topics of nutrition and micronutrient deficiency. Their consultancy is highly sought after by top corporate executives, celebrities, and the social elites. They've been all over TV, and they've been on the Jimmy Moore Show, and now they're on the Underground Wellness Show. Calton family, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, your book is so freaking awesome. I totally loved it. It might be like my early choice for book of the year. Seriously.
Well, that really would thrill us. No, we love it too. It was actually really fun for us to write. I mean, we mean every word of it, and we were excited about putting it out there. So we're thrilled when we hear that people are enjoying it.
Yeah, it was totally dope. Mira, tell us about your story. You have a really interesting story about how you got involved with the whole health war world. Enlighten us on that.
Yeah, it was by default. I was like a lot of people. I was 30. I had, I started my own company. I was living the high life. I was going out in New York as a publicist, and everything was, fantastic. Or so I thought. And just around my 30th birthday, I started getting really achy, and I just couldn't walk. I used to walk all the streets to get to my appointments. I couldn't do any of it. I couldn't lug around my folders, and my back was throbbing. And I finally went to see the doctor, and I remember sitting on his table, and he just looked up at me, and he's just like, well, you have the bone density of an 80-year-old woman, and it's not going to get any better. It's going to go downhill fast. And I was like, well, what do you say to that? How, why? And, that was pretty much the beginning of it. I had to basically sell my company, leave New York, and rely on people to take care of me for a while. It was not a fun situation. Luckily, I moved to Florida to be with my family, and I started doing a lot of research, and it led me to finally look at my habits, both nutritional and lifestyle, and try to figure out what I was doing. That led me to meet Jason, who at that time was not my husband. And we just started working together and trying to figure out what it was. And it came down to micronutrients. And once we were able to fix the micronutrients and become sufficient in the micronutrients, we reversed my bone density of an 80-year-old woman. I mean, advanced osteoporosis. We reversed it in 2 years.
That's
pretty crazy.
That is absolutely amazing. Hey, just one thing. This is for my own sake. I was wondering about the carbon monoxide poisoning thing. Where did that come from?
The carbon monoxide poisoning thing?
Yeah, you had mentioned that in the first chapter when you're talking about your story, all of the different things that were going on. You mentioned carbon monoxide poisoning.
I think we're probably at that point the different things that happened in a city. Just
gotcha.
The pollution and stuff like that can affect people's health.
Gotcha. It's just I wrote a question mark about it. Like, what? What's going on there? Hey, the first chapter of your book is very reminiscent of, you probably hear this all the time, the travels of Weston Price. You went on this 6-year expedition and you went and lived with and visited, 100 different countries? Tell us about that and what you found.
So after we reversed Mira's osteoporosis, we thought to ourselves, before that, I should back up for just a second and say that I had been working in the diet and nutrition field for about 12 years at the time when I met Mira. And of course, like a lot of people at that time, I was dealing with the macronutrients. I really was interested in the manipulation of the carbs, the fats, the proteins, what in the world ketogenic dieting was all about. And we were really working on weight loss and a few different chronic diseases like, perhaps some diabetes or cholesterol levels or blood pressure levels with clients. And I hadn't really had an opportunity to work much with or at all, actually, to that point with osteoporosis. So once we reversed that, we said to ourselves, well, wait a minute, maybe the answer really isn't in the macronutrients, or not fully, at least. Maybe that's only half of the story, because she was able to reverse her condition so quickly. Once we started to really look at the micronutrients, we decided to do something called the Kalten Project, which is exactly what you said, kind of retracing what Weston A. Price did, only on a grander scale. We took 6 years, 100 countries, all 7 continents, and like you said, we lived with, ate with, slept with, talked to and observed the people from the most remote areas on the planet. We did that, and then we also moved into the semi-remote areas and then eventually the urban areas because we wanted to get a full picture of what the people were doing in the remote areas that was different from the semi-remote and then again different from the urban to be able to pinpoint what the tipping point was, what the actual habits and the dietary changes that were taking place to create chronic disease.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. It makes you want to travel the world myself and do something similar. Very, very enlightening. It's very enlightening when I was in Vegas when I was reading this because it's like, people are really damaging their bodies in Vegas. But
yeah.
You mentioned two basic factors that all of the urban areas and emerging modern communities seem to share, and they were consuming fewer nutrients than their counterparts, and that they were actively participating in their own micronutrient depletion. We're going to get to that in a second, but first I want to ask you guys, how serious is micronutrient deficiency?
Well, it's the it's amazingly underestimated at this point. I mean, the fact is that the USDA says 9 out of 10 Americans are deficient in their micronutrients. We're in the middle of a hidden pandemic, a global pandemic of micronutrient deficiency. According to UK statistics, they assume that almost everyone, or they say actually 100% of people, are at risk for being micronutrient deficient. So, I mean, if you think it's not you, then you're really just kind of kidding yourself.
So 92% of us are deficient. Now, does this lead to disease? And if so, can you give us some examples?
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely leads to disease. We believe that micronutrient deficiency may be the most widespread and dangerous health condition of the 21st century, something we're really going to have to look at. And what does it lead to? I mean, every single major chronic disease comes off of a micronutrient deficiency. I mean, obviously, MIRAs stemmed from calcium, obviously, along with vitamin K and some of the other bone-building nutrients. But, you know, we look at chromium deficiencies play a major role in diabetes. We look at vitamin D deficiency plays a major role in cancer and many other diseases.
Omega-3
for depression. I mean, the list goes on and on. You can't find every single vitamin and mineral and micronutrient has associated with it a chronic disease when deficiency happens.
And these don't happen overnight, correct? It's something that takes a little while to process.
Right. We actually talk about, you know, we have a thing called the holes in your house. It's your house of optimal health, and it's your body. And basically, if you become deficient in a specific micronutrient, maybe once or, you know, every once in a while, you're going to have a small hole. And for some people, that might be a sleepless night or, you know, getting a cold or a sinus infection every now and again. But other people, if you have the same deficiency for longer period of time, that's when the chronic lifestyle diseases have time to actually really embed themselves, and that's when you actually get these lifetime diseases.
You totally beat me to my next question with that house of optimal health. You named the book Naked Calories because of what?
We named the book Naked Calories because that's what we think is happening to our food and what we want people to be aware of. So the term naked calories is a negative term. So food has two basic components. It has the caloric component, or the calorie, and then it has something called the micronutrients, which are, of course, the vitamins, minerals, and essential fatty acids that we all need to stay healthy. So when those micronutrients are stripped away from the calorie, we're left with naked calories, and when we eat these on a day-in and day-out basis, these are what's going to cause the micronutrient deficiencies to occur.
And that's how we become overfed but undernourished at the same time?
Absolutely. I mean, we say that we're in the middle of a hunger crisis in America, but not a hunger for calories, a hunger for the micronutrients that are no longer in those foods.
Mm-hmm. Many of us have been taught how to read food labels like percentage of calories and grams of this and grams of that, but few of us know about the intricacies of vitamin and mineral labeling. You went into the difference among them all, but the two that really stood out were the difference between EARs and RDIs. Can you tell our audience about that?
Sure. Well, the RDIs are the daily micronutrient intake levels considered sufficient to meet the requirements of nearly all or 97 to 98% of healthy individuals in each life stage and gender group. Now, the EAR is only the amount expected to satisfy the micronutrient requirements of 50% of the population. What happened the other day was actually kind of funny. We were watching the Dr. Oz show, and he was talking about vitamin B12. And he gave a statistic saying that 50%, what was that number? Like 80%. He based the number, the statistic, on the EAR, because that's how the government reports the deficiencies or sufficiency statistics based on the EAR. So they give you a number and say, we're 75% sufficient. Well, what people aren't hearing is we're 75% sufficient in meeting the requirements for only 50% of the population. So it's really a false sense of security they're giving us. They're giving us a number that's only going to make half of us healthy. And we're not even talking slightly healthy, because these numbers only deal with at the rate that you're going to get a micronutrient deficiency disease like scurvy or rickets. So really, they're really making it seem like we're safe when really we're far less sufficient than reported.
So how do we come up with that optimal daily dose as individuals?
Well, the optimal daily dose is a term that we kind of created, and it goes beyond the RDI. It takes into account several things. It takes into account natural components that are in foods, for like oxalic acid, like in spinach, where we may think that we're getting the 281 grams of calcium in a 10-ounce bag of spinach, but in reality, we're really getting about 25 of those because of natural components, in this case, oxalic acid. But it also takes in the second kind of line of depletion that occurs in our daily lives, and those are the everyday lifestyle habits. These are things like stress and things like taking over-the-counter prescription medications, exercising, drinking alcohol now and then. I mean, all these things have to be calculated in the equation if we're going to really kind of come up with how many micronutrients do I need in order to be healthy. So instead of just throwing a number out there like, oh, okay, we need 60 milligrams of vitamin C, maybe for the RDI, we need to know what we're doing. If we're exercising, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours a day, and we drink alcohol periodically throughout the week, and we have a very stressful life, and maybe we smoke, and we eat a lot of foods that may have components in it that deplete micronutrients naturally, that RDA may not be sufficient for us. And so we created something called the optimal daily dose, and that was really to try to come up with a way to ensure micronutrient sufficiency for the average individual.
When I do presentations, I always talk about the wheel of life, and healthy soil makes healthy plants, which makes healthy animals, which makes healthy people, on and on and on. And you wrote in your book, when our soil is naked, our food is naked. Just how depleted is our soil, and what does it have to do with micronutrient insufficiency or deficiency?
Well, it all starts in the soil, like you said. I mean, you know that, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware of that. But if the soil isn't sufficient in micronutrients, nothing that grows in it is going to be sufficient either. And the problem is that the food that we're growing these days, you know, they're not being paid based on how many nutrients are in this food. So they're growing crops faster, bigger, and we're getting more nutrient-depleted foods. And, for example, if you look at an apple, the old adage always says, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Well, you know, that might have been true for our grandparents. But today's apple looks nothing like the apple that our grandparents had 80 years ago. For example, that apple of today would have nearly 50% less calcium, almost 100% less iron, and 83% less magnesium, and less phosphorus, less potassium. It goes on and on. So the foods are really being stripped, and then you have to think, well, an animal is then going to eat that vegetable, that fruit, that grass, whatever it's going to be fed, and that same depletion then gets spread to the animal sources as well. So our meats aren't any better than the fruits and vegetables are. In fact, beef is, you know, completely, I think, which one? Yeah, beef has actually been 100% completely stripped of vitamin A compared to the same 80-year period.
That's amazing. I put stars next to this one quote that you have about the USDA standards have nothing to do with nutritional value. Then what do they have anything to do with?
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with nutritional value in the food, their standards. So they look at things like they look at the size of the produce. They look at whether or not it has bruises on it. They look at a number of different – the color of it. They have standards for what they're looking for, but none of those standards take that produce and say, does it have what it should have as far as those micronutrient values? I mean, we have to remember that when we say a food is healthy, what do we mean by that? What do you mean that a fresh orange juice is better or healthier for you than something you might buy in a, you know, in a carton in the grocery store? Why is it healthier? Or why is fresh eggs healthier than the ones you might buy that are 10 weeks old in the grocery store? They're healthier because they have more micronutrients. And that's what we really mean. We don't mean it has more protein or fat or carbs. We need to kind of start to look beyond those macronutrient equations that we're also kind of stuck in a lot of the time and realize that if we don't look at the micronutrients, we're not going to get to the heart and really the benefit that's going to be coming from those foods.
Jason, you talked about the EMDs, the everyday micronutrient depleters, and you rattled a bunch of them off earlier. I want to talk about two specific ones. First is global distribution and specifically travel time and storage.
Well, because of the global distribution that's happening now, I mean, no longer are we growing our food, certainly in our backyards, like our grandparents I guess we have a quote in the book that says 40% of all vegetables consumed in the United States were grown in backyards in 1945. And so that gives you an idea of how much we've changed. I doubt if anybody is growing a majority of their vegetables in their backyards, although probably I hope some people have small gardens. But the problem is now a lot of our food's coming from all over the place. The average potato has traveled 1,155 miles. The average tomato, 1,569 miles. Carrots travel over 1,800 miles to reach us on average. So we need to realize that when farmers are creating these foods to go to market, to travel these distances, they're picking them before they're ripe often. And that means that the produce hasn't had a chance to naturally absorb all of the nutrients that it should be from the soil. Even though the soil is depleted, it didn't even get to absorb the depleted amount of nutrients that's in the soil. And then it's shipped. And that has another risk factor because it's exposed to air, exposed to light, it's exposed to bruising, and then there's heat in the back of those trucks, and heat also depletes the micronutrients, and then it goes to the store. And then the store, again, puts it out into the light and maybe stores it for a certain period of time. And then, of course, we take it home and we chop it up, we cut it up, we cook it up, we microwave it, we eat it, and then we put it in the refrigerator, and then we reheat it. And so, you know, this food has been through the ringer. It isn't like what we saw when we went to the remote places all around the world where people would pick a fresh fruit, they'd eat it off the tree while they were talking to you, or they'd catch a fish that morning and it would be on the fire within a matter of minutes after coming back. And those foods are packed with micronutrients the way that our ancestors have been doing it for thousands of years and how we need to start thinking about food again.
Hey, you just reminded me of a question that I skipped. The people who are in the more remote areas who are just becoming more civilized, we'll say, or modernized, were they aware that the foods that they were consuming, these processed foods that they were consuming, were causing some of these new diseases that they were getting?
You know, it was really based on whichever culture we were visiting. In some places we would go and we would ask them, for example, in Papua New Guinea, it was only a year that they had just started bringing in Coke, and Coke became this absolutely fascinating thing to them. I mean, they actually have the entire town center is just for Coke. They play darts, and if you throw the dart, you pay for a dart, and if you throw the dart and actually get it, you get a Coke. So their entire culture is now around Coke. And we asked them, we said, you know, How are people doing? And they said, well, we got white bread and Coke now. And now we think that, you know, we're getting fat. And we said, okay, well, let's look at some, you know, more medical standpoint. We asked some of the doctors and they said, no, cancer rates are skyrocketing. And when we said, you know, do you think that it has anything to do with that? We asked the locals and they had actually never put those two things together. They only thought it made them fat.
Wow.
They didn't realize that there were much, you know, much bigger problems just lurking.
Wow.
So, you know, those people, and then some, you know, we worked with other cultures where we actually sat down with them and we said, you know, the country wants to start giving them subsidized foods, and they gave them a list. And we said, you know, can we see the lists? And they actually let us go over what the government was going to subsidize, and we got to actually share with them which things were good and which things were bad.
Wow. A couple of things that really got me were the picture of the little boy, you know, and it's just, you know, tribal garb and whatnot, drinking a soda. I mean, must have been 4 years old, just throwing down a soda. And then there was the story about the cell phone guy. The cell phone guy who was buying up all the cell phone cards because it was like a status symbol, but he was spending all his money. It's crazy, like, how this whole thing happens. I want to get back into the depleters. Freezing and canning. I've read in some places that frozen fruits and veggies can be nutritionally superior to their fresh counterparts because the nutrients are like locked in since they're frozen. Is that true?
Well, I don't know if I would use the word superior, but I would say that in areas where people have winter months, like now, you know, in the northern hemisphere of the United States, and even, you know, and just in a lot of areas, if you can't get fresh food, then we often get the question, would I be any worse off by purchasing maybe organic vegetables, frozen vegetables or fruits? And the way that we look at this is, I don't think you'd be any worse off. And here's why. I mean, obviously, they're not fresh, so they've already had to go through their depletion that we just talked about by being shipped in and everything else. So lots of times, some of the different companies are really starting to pay attention, and they are picking these fruits and vegetables at the peak of ripeness, and then they do typically put them through a blanching process, which is a depleter. So, you know, by heating up the fruits and vegetables and then flash freezing them afterwards, there is a small amount of micronutrients that are depleted. But the nice thing is, that freezing process locks in what's left of the micronutrients for a period of about a year or two. So I think it's kind of an equal washout. I think you'd be just as good. And if you can get organic frozen, you're probably better off.
Yeah, that's what I like to do, organic frozen. When I'm cooking my veggies, or should I have them raw, should I steam them? Should we put them in the microwave? What's your guys' take on that?
Well, don't put them in the microwave.
I know.
That's probably the first thing not to do. No, steaming is obvious, is the best. The least amount of time possible. Allow it to do a little bit of breakdown to allow some of the nutrients to you know, really blossom. But the whole thing is you're going to lose the least amount when you're steaming them. It's not going to end up in the water. We give people tips. So if you're somebody who really likes mushy vegetables, and, you know, my grandparents do, if that's your thing, then use the water for something else. Make rice with it. Use it to saute your vegetables. But at least put those, you know, all the nutrients that have now escaped into your water, put them back on your plate somehow. So steaming is the best, and microwaving is actually the worst.
I'm sure. Some of these vegetables have nutrient depleters inside of them, about like oxalic acid and tannins, phytates. We've talked a lot about phytates on the show. Can you tell us about those, oxalic acid and tannins, and is it possible to cook them out? Are they always bad? Can you get into that?
Well, you know, first of all, they're not – we don't want to say that they're bad in any way. I mean, there's some studies coming out that some of the phytates and oxalates can actually have some anti-cancer principles. So just because something, you know, depletes us of our micronutrients doesn't mean it's bad all the way around. You know, so we don't want to paint that picture. But what we do want to make people aware of is certainly if we're eating these things, especially in their raw state, you're going to have to factor in those micronutrient depletions when you're looking at how many vitamins and minerals I'm going to take in to become sufficient. You know, so people don't often think about that tannins aren't just found in wine, they're found in coffee and they're found in tea. So, coffee and tea have excellent antioxidant properties as well. Coffee being one of the highest antioxidant foods on the planet, and not just by a little bit, by a lot. So we don't want to take anything away. But what we do want people to be aware of is that these things are occurring in their everyday life. Yes, there are ways that you can minimize them. For instance, sprouting grains, if you eat grains, it can get rid of some of the phytates. But, you know, at the same time, there are ways to certainly minimize them. But, again, I wouldn't shy away from them necessarily. I'd just become aware of them.
Gotcha. For our audience, I'm about halfway through our questions, so if you guys want to call in with questions of your own, 347-237-5608, 347-237-5608, or if you're already in the switchboard, just go ahead and press number 1 to get on the air. We've covered some of the ways in which we can, or the minerals are depleted by like processing and food travel, and we really have nothing to do with those. I mean, but there's things that we kind of do to ourselves, so... You talked, Jason, about medications earlier. Can you get into that and maybe give us an example of which medications would cause certain depletions of different minerals?
Sure. This is probably one of the, you know, I don't know why people aren't thinking about the fact that over-the-counter and prescription medications deplete micronutrients. They've done a great job telling us, you know, they list off a million things in these commercials. I sometimes watch these commercials and it's like, we'll cause this, that, the other thing, and maybe death, you know, and I'm like, while someone's smiling on the other side of on the TV screen, and I'm amazed, but they never mention micronutrient depletion. Over-the-counter and prescription medications are major micronutrient depleters. And so, I mean, some of the over-the-counter examples would be things like, you know, your ibuprofen, like your Advil or your Motrin. They can deplete folic acid, iron, melatonin, zinc. Aspirin depletes folic acid, vitamin C, iron, potassium, zinc. That's an important one because we don't sometimes realize that we need vitamin C and we need zinc to keep a strong immune system. So, I mean, you know, zinc it plays an intricate role in white blood cell formation, and those white blood cells then go out and destroy the bacteria and viruses. So those things are important. CoQ10 is depleted by a variety of different medications, especially your statin drugs. I mean, look, I mean, we're taking these millions of people now are taking statin drugs, and some physicians are prescribing statin drugs as a precautionary procedure. But we have to realize that statin drugs deplete CoQ10, and CoQ10 is a deficiency by some science, you know, by some people excuse me, what am I saying?
Some medical drugs.
Some medical, you know, professionals believe that CoQ10 deficiency is the causative factor in heart disease. So, you know, we really have to start to become aware of these things.
So if someone's taking a statin drug or any of the other drugs that you mentioned, should they increase their consumption of that nutrient, or how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're taking a statin, then you definitely want to replenish your CoQ10. But the problem is, you know, then you come up with, when do I take it? You know, I'm taking my statin. How many times a day am I taking my statin? You definitely don't want to take it at the same times. You know, a lot of people, you know, they take their morning pills, they take their nighttime pills. Certainly don't take it at the same time as your statin. You'd have to try to get it in at a time period when the statin may not be affecting it. And whether or not that's even possible at the dosages some people are taking, who knows?
One that may surprise people in terms of depleters. Actually, you know what? I'm flipping through your book right now. Another reason that people should buy your book is that you actually list a lot of these drugs and the minerals and vitamins that they block. And so pick that up, page 134 through 136. One depleter that may surprise a lot of people is exercise. Can you tell our audience about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, exercise is something that we obviously believe in. We think everyone should exercise. But those people who train for more than 6 hours a week are usually have an iron deficiency anemia, because just the way you sweat, and everyone tells you to have a Gatorade because to replenish your electrolytes. Well, electrolytes are just micronutrients. So basically, every time you sweat, you have to be aware that you need to replace more than just those electrolytes, because you're utilizing those vitamins and minerals faster when you're exercising. So the harder you work out, the longer you work out, the more you need to replenish.
Yeah. I think it's a great, I mean, we really need to, people who exercise really need to start thinking about a multivitamin. You know, way back, you know, 20 years ago now, I used to own a nutrition store, and I remember when people would come in, and this was back when EAS was big and Phosphagen was all the rage, and people would come in and be like, you know, what do I need to buy? What do I need to buy to be, you know, get big or be healthy or be strong or lose fat or gain muscle or whatever they wanted to do? And they would always walk to the protein powders or all these, you know, these different sports supplements. They walk right by the multivitamins. They walk right by their essential vitamins and minerals. We need to understand that that is one of the best sports supplements you can take.
You said Phosphagen. I almost forgot about Phosphagen. That was a
Remember
long time
old EAS?
Ago. Yeah, you just brought back memories of college right there. Another one that I don't know why I just never even thought about this is dieting, because they're eating less food. Can you touch on that as well?
Well, you know, food is the delivery system for micronutrients. So the less food you eat, the less micronutrients you're going to take in. And unfortunately, that usually goes hand in hand with exercise. So you go on a diet, you exercise more, deplete yourself more, and then you eat less, you take in less micronutrients. And while you think you're doing something good for yourself, trying to lose this weight, what you're actually doing is causing micronutrient deficiency. Another thing is, when people are dieting, they generally eat the same foods over and over and over again. Again, only those specific micronutrients that appear in those foods are going to get into their bodies. So it can cause some pretty serious micronutrient deficiencies.
Jason, you analyze, this is probably my favorite part of the book. You analyze several really popular diets. It was like DASH and South Beach and Atkins and something else, can't remember, to see if they actually met the RDA or RDI sufficiencies. How did that go?
Well, you know, don't you? I mean, you know that number. Do you want me to tell it to your audience, or you want them to read it for themselves?
It's up to you. It's your book. If you want to give it away.
Well, we usually kind of keep it a secret. You know, okay. This is what I'll say. I was surprised. You know, we went into this study, and here's the background of it. You know, so many people come up and say, if I just eat a balanced or healthy diet, can't I just get all the micronutrients I need from doing that? You know, and for, you know, quite frankly, for years, I didn't know the answer. I mean, maybe you can. I mean, it certainly sounds logical to just say, oh, yeah. I mean, how many times have you heard it? Everything in moderation, right? I mean, so this is a hard argument. What do you say to a person who says that to you? So what we wanted to do is we said, let's really look at it. Let's look at some of these diets that were written by some of the best people in the field. You know, I mean, the DASH diet was written by a collaboration of like over 100 of the top medical professionals in the world. And I wanted to see that if we had real professionals putting pen to paper and really writing out what people should be eating in their so-called balanced, healthy diets, where the micronutrient levels would be if we followed exactly down to the gram what they suggest in their own respective texts for their recommended meal plans. And what we found out is not one of the diets came close to meeting micronutrient sufficiency for the 27 essential micronutrients we studied.
That's so funny. When I was putting together the questions, I was like, I wonder if they want to give away this part or not. I'm glad you brought that up. One thing that people say, I can get all of my nutrients from food. And obviously that's really not happening for the vast majority of people out there. And then the question comes, so what kind of multivitamin, multimineral should I take? And another thing that for some reason just hadn't crossed my mind was the competition between these nutrients. Can you talk about that, please?
Well, yeah, I'll just grab that real quick. This was probably it's one of the most important things in the book, to be honest with you, and it's something that we discovered when we were working with Mira and trying to figure out what we're going to do, how we're going to reverse this advanced osteoporosis. What we discovered was that buried in peer-reviewed medical journals, and not just a few, I mean, we're talking hundreds, even thousands of different studies, are these what science typically calls micronutrient interactions, but we kind of renamed competition just for the simplicity of it so people understand the battle and the competition ensuing in the multivitamin or in all sports supplements that deal with the micronutrients that compete. And so what we learned was that, you know, in a typical multivitamin, over 80% of the vitamins and minerals in those products have a natural competition. Now, we want people to understand that these are natural competitions. These are things that have kind of saved us in our food over in the past. I mean, a lot of people talk about cod liver oil and how much vitamin A and is in that. How come you don't get a toxic effect from that? Well, that's because of vitamin D. Those two compete with each other for the same receptor site. And in reality, it's nature's kind of safety net. So they make sure that we don't take in too many micronutrients. Back when food actually used to be plentiful and had an abundance of micronutrients, it protected us. But that's not necessarily happening today, and especially it's important in our supplements because a supplement should be just that. And we don't want people to ever get the wrong idea about what we believe. We believe food first. We will never, and maybe possibly never, create a supplement that will outdo the power of whole food. But for those individuals like myself and everybody else that I've worked with who eat whole food and do the best job we can at it and are not getting the micronutrients, we certainly don't want to take a supplement that then just carries on these competitions, negating almost 80% of the effect. So micronutrient competition was something we looked at. We studied, like I said, hundreds of these journals and picked out what other scientists and other health professionals and other doctors and other nutritionists have found over a period of now maybe 80 years that they reported in their research, and we kind of put them together, and then we mapped out those competitions, if you will, and we created what's called anti-competition technology.
And anti-competition technology, that's something we can just kind of Google and find some products that are kind of have that standard?
Well, anti-competition technique, you definitely want to Google it, read about it. We have a lot of information on our website. And anti-competition technology is basically just is taking those micronutrients in a multivitamin and separating them out to ensure that the competition has been eliminated. Now, a lot of different multivitamins out there have tried to do this over the years by special coatings and you know, time releasing and putting it into, you know, doing that kind of thing. But the problem with that is it doesn't necessarily guarantee that the competition isn't going to take place. The only way to really ensure it is to separate the nutrients. It's kind of like two fighting kids. You can yell at them all you want to, but until you put them in separate rooms, you're not guaranteed that the fighting's going to stop.
Last call for callers. I am surprisingly almost done with my questions. We're kind of flying through this, so 347-237-5608. On the other end of the spectrum, we've got Synergy as well, and so they're not always competing. They can actually help each other, right?
Absolutely. Certain micronutrients can really boost the absorption of each other, and that's why at the same time as looking for something with anti-competition, you want to look at something that's going to match those synergistic nutrients to put them in the same formulation. Another thing I wanted to add when Jason was talking about competition was the fact that a lot of these pills that have been doing it over the years, that have been doing special coatings, what they found was that when they try to delay something from being absorbed into your body, so they time it out with different coatings, a lot of times they're ending up not being the right path. They're not going to disintegrate in the right part of your intestine. So basically, they're not going to be absorbed the way that they should be. So that's another reason why you really have to separate them out rather than just coat them and try to, you know, try to mess with nature.
By the way, that made me think of the story you told about the lack of absorption and what it did to the I won't get into it on the show. I don't want to gross anybody out, but
it's a true story. It's very funny. We actually had to retypeset the book because when we were at that part in the book, and the readers will read it, the listeners will be able to read it in the book. Our editor actually said, you know, I actually have to share a story with you. She had never, you know, this is a woman you don't really know as your editor at the beginning, and she says, you know, I had to tell you the story because it happened to me. So we had to include it. It was just too good.
Wow. I've actually heard, like, stories about that, but I was like, that's probably not true about porta-potties and whatnot. But then I read yours, and I was like, wow, maybe it is true. Let's go to the phone lines. Call us from the 813. What's your name? Where are you calling from? 813.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right. My name's Tim, calling from Yuma.
Thanks for calling in, Tim from Yuma. What's your question?
Hey, you brought up a point about how to heat up or how to reheat vegetables. If I got to prepare, you know, a lot of food in the morning and everything, how would I or best go about reheating my meal if not the microwave?
You know, low heat for a longer period of time. I know it's a pain, but the higher heat you put things in, the more micronutrients you're going to get wrecked. So, you know, put it in the oven on warm, low heat, or in a skillet, low heat. But it takes a little longer, but you're going to actually not – I mean, if you think about money-wise, at least you're not wasting your money and killing everything in the food.
Right.
Absolutely. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tim.
We didn't get to talk about meats. So you guys are fans of grass-fed, free-range, that type of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give a shout out to my farmer here. I mean, he's on speed dial with me. He's Farmer Steve out at the Dam Ranch, which is actually what it's called, which is actually on the Dam Street. And the reason why it's called that is because he actually lives on a real dam. But he's great, and we're not only fans, but we're huge advocates of it. I mean, you know, if you're going, first of all, we just cannot get our minds around treating animals badly. You know, I think that a lot of times those of us who do eat meat and believe in that way of eating, you know, with something we kind of get pigeonholed into, oh, well, then you're not an animal activist. You don't care about animals. And that just couldn't be further from the truth, at least for Mira and I. You know, we want an animal to be respected, and we want it to be treated as humanely as possible. You know, what we do to that animal, we get back tenfold with us. I mean, we harm that animal and we mistreat it, and it's only going to come back and hurt us in the long run. So, you know, what's happening with the cows and being fed candy bars and being fed a food source that has never been fed to it in the history of its existence, and the same thing with, you know, the chickens and everything else that's happening, we're just not big fans of that. So the best thing you can do is to really support your local farmers who are doing the right thing and getting out there and making a difference in the world.
Over the weekend, I tweeted something that I found in your book, and it got retweeted and shared quite a bit. And it was about cows being fed candy because it's cheaper. Is that true?
Yeah, it's factory farm cattle are often fed stale candy because it's cheap. So they actually did some numbers on this, and they found that, you know, because they fatten up so fast, it was a great idea. They don't even take the wrappers off. They can just throw in anything that's going bad in the stores, and the cows eat it. And basically, the average cow, I think, is eating like chocolate, I think it's like 5 pounds a day, and candy 2 pounds a day or something like that. It's a massive amount of junk food that you would never want to put into your body is going into these cows, and then they're feeding it to us.
Right. I think it's really important for people to think about this for a second, too, because this is one of the things I like to talk about a little bit. We get a lot of people out there saying that fat is bad. You know, look at all the bad things about fat, particularly saturated fat. But I think what we have to remember here is, first of all, I don't believe that. Second of all, if you take any animal and you take it away from its natural feeding, and you throw a bunch of sugar down its throat and candy bars and a bunch of hormones in its ear and take it out of the sunlight and change its environment, it's amazing cows are still producing any kind of beneficial meat. You know, that would never occur, with our ancestors who were eating regular, you know, cows and chickens who were just living naturally. Once we go back to that practice again, any negative that would have been occurring or may be occurring in the genetic makeup of perhaps those fats and those meats, the way that they're being factory farmed now, would disappear immediately.
Our callers are being so quiet and shy this week. It's all good. I'll give you guys a couple more minutes to call in, 347-237-5608. Take-home message here. To me, and I'll see if it's the same for you guys, it's eat real food. It's reduce or remove the poor foods. It's supplement with an anti-competition multi. Minimize your EMDs. Is there anything else?
No. We always say we have a three-point approach, and you named it. Basically, eat better foods, you know, like we talked about, the organic, the local, the grass-fed, all these types of things. And those you really want to take in and cook them responsibly. Don't microwave your food if you want it to still have any nutrients left. And then we talk about getting rid of those EMDs, you know, drinking, smoking, you know, all these things that you might do, exercise, be aware that it's going to further reduce, you know, deplete you. And then the proper supplementation. And if you do those three things, you don't have to get a disease. I mean, I can't even tell you how it's changed everything, my total perspective of health. I mean, this was not my interest before this time. But it really is so doable, and I just love working with the clients now and watching them being able to get healthy. And it's really, it's these little baby steps and making a few small changes in their lives.
It's completely changed my awareness. I was at Whole Foods today, and I was like, how can I maximize my micronutrient intake? You know what I'm saying? And so I really appreciate you guys writing the book. Mira and Jason, thanks so much for coming on my show. Your book totally rocks, and your website is CaltonNutrition.com. Your book is called Naked Calories, and thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Also, you should just let maybe your listeners know that you can come on to the Calton Nutrition website, and we offer two quizzes there, free quizzes they can take. One's a 50-question quiz about just so that they can figure out how micronutrient sufficient or deficient they may be, and we'll give them just a snapshot of where they're falling right now. And again, it's not this is not a scientific quiz by any means. It's not like a blood work quiz, but it will give you a good idea of where you fall in that spectrum. And the other one is a multivitamin stack-up quiz. If they want to say, you know, if they say, you know, I've been taking this multivitamin for 5 years, I think it's pretty good. Why don't you can come on and you can stack it up against what we call the ABCs of optimal supplementation, and we'll just give you a kind of an evaluation as to what we think how the multivitamin is doing.
We certainly will do that. Thank you very much. You guys have a good night.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye, Sean.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Good stuff with the Calton fam. You guys got to check out their book, Naked Calories. It's in the UW store, Amazon.com. It's on their website. Just go ahead and get it. I'm 100% sure that you're going to love it. Very fascinating stuff. What we got coming up Thursday, again, we got Paul Check coming on. Let me get on my calendar here. Next Tuesday, the authors of Coach Your Way Thin, which I read last night. Good stuff on kind of mindset when it comes to losing fat and whatnot. Kind of like Chapter 10 of my book, but more expanded. Dr. Amen, I've got his book right in front of me. I'm about to start reading it. And as soon as we get done, he's coming on to talk about his book, The Amen Solution, next Thursday. It's Valentine's Day, the following Tuesday, and I'm not sure what I'm going to be up to, so I left it open. The following Thursday is going to be Chris Kresser. Then the week after that is all Paleo Summit interviews, 22 presentations by the finest in the paleo and the health world. Matt Stone is on the 28th of February, and then on March 1st is Dr. Nicola McFagin, who's talking about the Lyme diet. So I'm out, guys. Thanks for tuning in. See you on Thursday.